Good evening. You're watching Stockwatch with myself, Nastasia Arensa. Tackling your questions in studio tonight is David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities and Wayne McCurry from FNB Wealth and Investments. Don't forget to send through those questions to us via SMS to 41392, email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za, or you can tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stockwatch. Gentlemen, thank you so much for your time. Before we get into the questions, and I can see some have been coming in since early afternoon, so it might be a busy show, let's reflect on today's market performance. Start off with you, Wayne.
Well, look, we waited for what Chairman Powell was going to say, and he said all the right things. So you'll see just now when you look at overseas markets, they're all up. And our market, after having quite a bad couple of days, was actually also up, but it'll be up tomorrow again as well.
Dave?
So it was strong.
That's it. I was trying to watch the testimony, and I was trying to work out, you know, I mean, because there are a lot of questions I've thrown in, most of them. I think they could get it over within a few minutes, but senator, yeah, I think it's in the Senate at the moment, or whether it's in the House. No, it was in the House.
Yeah.
Cause Ocasio, what's her name? Cortez was there.
Yes.
I saw her. So that's the House. But to be honest, I think everything was in the statement that he said, and everything, you know, whatever was said afterwards was just kind of blunder, you know, nothing really significant. But markets are waiting for this cut. Is it going to be 50 points? Is it going to be 25 points? I'm not sure. I'm not quite sure. It doesn't really matter. I don't like markets that go up because interest rates are going to come down.
I think that's an important point. Mm. Ultimately, at the end of the day, the economy drives the share market. Mm. Now, the economy is okay, but the growth rate is definitely slowing down. So the best years are behind us. Mm. So what's pushing the markets up now is that interest rates, the prospect for interest rates are coming down is going to happen. You know, interest rates are going to come down. And this all changed in December last year. Markets were very bad October, November, beginning of December. Mm-hmm. And the moment the market sniffed, interest rate policy is going to change, because remember, it's been going up for the previous 2 years.
Yeah.
Markets rallied. In low interest rates themselves cannot support markets indefinitely. Mm-hmm. So when you look at the economy, it's going down. Normally, markets follow the economy down, whereas now markets are going up and the economy is going down, and this gap has opened. And this gap is only there because of interest rates, but it is ultimately unsustainable. I mean, you can cut interest rates more and more. If the economy continues to be weak, stock markets will come under pressure.
All right.
And we're going to get a very mediocre earnings season, which starts next week. And that might also just temper the market a little bit. And look, I'm a bull. I'm always bullish.
Yeah.
We have a lot of cash on the sidelines. And I just can't press the button or pull the trigger, whichever analogy you want to use. I can't. I just don't feel, for what Wayne says, that this is going to be a really sustainable run at this stage. I need more evidence. That's what I'm saying. I'm not saying I'm going to be a seller. Just need a little more evidence that, you know, things are going to improve if interest rates come down, and a lot of the problems that have been keeping us down, whether it's trade wars or whatever, are going to be overcome or get out the way.
And the U.S. economy hasn't felt the full effect of these trade wars yet. You know, it hasn't really worked its way into the economy yet. Mm. So you saw yesterday, whenever it was, BASF, which is a massive company, you know, ingrained in how the world's economy works. They said, it's tough out there. Earnings are down. These trade wars are having a marked effect on our business. And unfortunately, you've got President Trump there, where he's playing his own political agenda, so you don't know what's going to happen next.
And Tesh, if you look at our market as well, it's two different markets at play, and it's been the miners that have actually kept us up, and miners that we didn't expect to keep us up have kept us up, which has been mainly platinum. Gold and platinum.
Yeah.
And very few people have the courage to actually buy those shares or be positive about them. If you look at the other part of it, which has been the South African ink stocks, you know, they've done virtually nothing. A few have done okay. A lot of them haven't. So it hasn't been, the local market has not been that easy to read either.
All right, so let's stay with commodities, because there is a question here asking, what is the panel's view on the iron ore price at this stage? You're smiling, so you can
I'm smiling because when you think about it logically, the gap between steel prices and iron ore prices have opened. You know, steel prices are not running up. I don't know if you've had a look at ArcelorMittal. Not that it's it's a reflection of global steel demand, but it's a reflection of what's happening maybe globally. And I fail to understand why the iron ore price has shot up. At 100 or 80 or 90, we could understand because there was a shortage. But 123 or thereabouts is worrying me a bit.
Well, look, it's unsustainable at that level. We all know this. So the brief reasons why: demand is good. So there's no problem with demand, but it's not surging forward. You know, it's there, it's there. But there was a problem with supply because of the slimes dams and all of this. Now there's is it 1.4 billion tons of seaborne iron ore? It's an astronomical figure, and the market's in deficit by, depending on how you count it, anywhere between 30 and 80 million tons. Right. So it's very small in relation to the total iron ore market, and yet the iron ore has gone through the roof. Mm. Now, there's no shortage of iron ore anywhere in the world. There's plenty of iron ore. The actual bottleneck is the transport infrastructure and the railways and the port systems to get it out. But that can change. So this people are, every iron ore miner there is spending nights working hard to get production up to benefit from that 120. So it is coming down.
Yeah.
Clearly, if you just don't know, is it next month? Is it in 3 months' time? It is coming down, because even all the countries where you've had the slimes dam collapses and you've brought in all the sort of legislation, they can't do without that revenue forever either. Mm. You know, so these mines can't stay closed forever. They can't, because the government needs the revenue from it. So supply will come back in and the price will come down. I mean, not that long ago, the iron ore price was $40 and everyone was going bankrupt, just about.
All right. Next question says, why is Sasol's price dropping so much? Should I hold or sell?
It hasn't got to do with the oil price. I think this has to do with Lake Charles and the overshoot. You know, the overshoot of spending and the crimping of margins that they're going to make. So, in other words, the price is adjusting for what they will make at these kind of levels of investment. So you'll have to write off huge amounts of money, write off theoretically in terms of what the returns are going to be. Mm-hmm. So I haven't looked at anything for some time. I know, you know, I don't know if they've put out anything in the last few weeks that I haven't been here, but I mean, there's been huge disappointment there.
Look, if you just put aside the actual their own chemical plant, there's been, same as Sasol, plenty of other guys did the same thing because gas was so cheap. So everyone saw this as an opportunity to make serious money because gas is so cheap, they can convert it into chemicals, but everyone's doing it. So the prices are coming down. So it's no extra bad news on Sasol, just that the market that they operate in has turned negative. But I mean, understand Sasol, even if you're really negative, they can earn 40 Rand this year, and they can earn 2 years' time, maybe 55, 60 Rand per share. But most importantly, in 2 or 3 years' time, they'll make 80, 90 Rand cash flow per share. So I wouldn't sell it. That might be tough, I wouldn't sell it.
The share price has been unusually weak. I always use 360 as the bottom.
More as the bottom,
And it's broken through there, which is a concern, because 360 seemed to be the point at which people believed, or investors believed, it was cheap.
Look, the oil price is okay. The Rand hasn't strengthened massively, although it's, you know, it's a bit stronger today on the back of the statement. So they're going to make money out of that. Lake Charles, the cash flows end quite soon, and they get very positive cash flows. There's no Lake Charles at all in the Sasol share price. You know, even a disastrous situation, they're still going to make a profit from it.
Yeah.
It might not be $1 billion. It might only be $300 million. But that's not in the share price at all. So it's tough. It's tough as a Sasol shareholder. But I think you sit with this. Wait.
This is why you just got to sit this way. I agree. Okay, there's going to be a point which is going to be attractive. You don't want to catch falling knives. But I think if it settles down a little bit and starts to stabilize, might be an attractive entry point.
Okay, so we've got two different questions. One is on Hammerson and Intu, and the other one is focused on the SA and UK property stocks. Mm-hmm. Let's probably try and answer that all in one. Hammerson versus Intu, and what's your view in the UK property stock markets and South Africa?
Okay, well, the UK property stock market is offering extremely good value because their share prices have been slaughtered. Put up the Intu share price the last year. Okay. These things have been properly slaughtered.
Yeah.
And they're struggling with loan-to-value ratios. They're struggling with debt. I say Intu's done another deal where they're going to get a couple of £100 million because I think they've gone into a joint venture. Mm-hmm. Everyone's battling everywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, even Capco, which is the star, you know, it's only Covent Garden's working. All the Oil's Court, they had to sell Kensington. These guys are battling. But that's when opportunities arise. Mm. These things are... If you just look through Brexit and you make the assumption that the UK economy is not going to collapse, these are probably offering very good longer-term value. I don't know whether I'll buy it today, to be honest.
Yeah.
But they're offering very good longer-term value, I would think.
You can buy London for nothing. I mean, it's the first time it's been like that.
Yeah.
I mean, property prices are really as cheap as they are.
You know, residential properties, compared to a year and a half ago, these guys are selling them 30% less, these new developments, just to try and get them out. You know, it's literally a 30% discount on the price.
Don't get too excited, because if you convert even those prices into
don't even do it. You can buy 100 now. It's cheap now. You can buy 100 square meter second story apartment block in not quite in the posh areas of London, in the maybe not such posh areas of London, only cost you 10 million rand.
Yeah.
That's all.
So if you want to live in a cupboard, yeah, you can go buy something.
The next question is Coronation a good buy at the current price?
I don't know. It depends on the market.
Yeah.
If you think this JSE is going to keep going up and money is going to keep flowing in, they will go up, they will make money. Like today, I think there was a belief. You know what's a very good indicator? Uh-huh. Was the JSE share itself.
Yeah.
If you looked at, the JSE as a company, not the JSE index, what volume's down? 40%. Mm. So it gives you an idea how tight the financial markets are, or wealth markets are. And also there's been very little performance in the JSE over 5 years. But when volumes are down, it suggests that not even the traders
people
are trading. You know?
Yeah. I mean, Coronation over time has proven themselves as one of the best asset managers in the country. Mm-hmm. The same as any asset managers, you have good years and you have tough years. You know, no one's found the holy grail of asset management. And they're going through a couple of tough years now, but, you know, they've survived through thick and thin over decades. Mm. There's no reason why they shouldn't survive this and show good performance going up. And I mean, what's the dividend yield here?
Well, they pay everything out in dividends.
There's no capex. You know, there's no. Mm. They got lucky enough they can adjust their cost base very quickly, because a lot of their cost is just essentially performance bonuses, which just goes to zero when you don't perform. Mm. So, I mean, it's a geared play on the stock market. So our stock market, as David said, has gone sideways for 5 years. This 10% we've had this year is the best return we've had for a very long time. You know, we're overdue a bull market. Maybe we get a nice bull market and Coronation share price will fly.
All right, so we're going to take a quick ad break, and when we come back, we'll answer your questions on Raynet. I see some coming in on the SA retailers. Remember, keep sending through those questions to us via SMS to 41392 or email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za. Welcome back. Taking a look at the market's picture, starting off with things in the U.S. It's green across the board. We had the S&P 500 jumping above 3,000 for the first time after Fed chief signaled a rate cut is coming. Looking at the picture in Europe, that went negative as stocks closed a little bit lower as Powell hinted at that Fed rate cut. But still with me in studio is David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities and Wayne McCurry from F&B Wealth and Investments. So I mentioned before the break that we have a question about Raynet and a company with the code CMH. That should be something motor holding.
Combined
motor holdings. There we go. CMH and Reinet.
Okay, we talk about CMH. These are very, very smart operators. Extremely good management in an extremely difficult industry. So they car hire everything. They really run a good, I've admired them for many, many years. But it's a tough industry. The share's cheaper. But it's not a, you know, it's not a 20% of your portfolio holding. Mm-hmm. But this thing does look cheap. If we just get any sort of recovery in our economy. Okay, look, admittedly, motor vehicle sales were up this last release. Eh?
Yeah.
So maybe they have seen the worst. I really like this company. As I said, it's not a big proportion of your portfolio, but very good operators, solid. They've been there forever.
Macintosh, yeah. That is that, yeah.
They've been there
straightforward,
forever, straightforward, no nonsense, really.
Tells it like it is.
Really an admirable management team.
They've been listed, I think they were listed forever. About 87, yeah. And since, but never let you down. They've been tough periods, but overall very solid business.
Okay, David, you
is
can
it Reinet or Reinet?
It's Reinet.
Spell it.
R-E-I-N-E-T.
Okay, Reinet.
next question is on Remgro. Do you want to take this one? What's your view on Remgro?
I've got no strong views on Remgro. For the point of, it's nothing more than a whole bunch of First Rand stocks, virtually the whole First Rand group, and Mediclinic, you know, which you can put together yourself. I think everything else underneath it doesn't really move the needle. Mm. So I think the allure or the charm that Remgro used to have,
very when different nowadays.
Yeah, you know, when it had British American Tobacco and Richemont and what else was in there? Basically, those
they
two.
Had all the mining companies?
They had a huge conglomerate, you know, and you could really get a lot of value out of it. I think that's gone. And I think, so from that point of view, I would rather hold the underlying companies, you know, either go for Discovery, either go for First Rand itself, go for Mediclinic, and you can put them in your own proportion. So I don't think, to be honest, that they're adding a lot of value to those underlying businesses.
But the point is, if First Rand runs, this will run as well, eh?
Okay, so speaking of Discovery, we do have a question that wants to know, Discovery looks expensive. Should I buy now or wait a little bit?
My view is wait.
Yes.
Wait a little bit.
Look, this bank, they've come out with quite a few statements. The last statement almost hinted that, you know, it's going to come out a bit later than what people thought.
Yeah.
But the point is, you're not going to show a profit on this for a very long time. And there is serious cash being put into this bank. It's not cheap to launch a bank.
Yeah.
So they're going to launch what, I forget if it was 1,000 customers a week or 5,000 a month, but they gave their break even at 500,000 or 600,000. You know, it's going to take you a good couple of years at this onboarding rate to actually get to that number. And then you've got to, you've put in, I'm guessing now, but I would think they've put in, this bank's going to cost them 5, 6, 7 billion rand. Mm. And you don't see any return on that for a sustained time period. So there's no dividends. I mean, Discovery's got no positive cash flows.
Yeah.
So your divvies aren't going to go up. And the banking environment is a highly, I work for FNB, obviously. It's a highly competitive environment. Other banks aren't sleeping here. And that goes for all the new competitors. Other banks, the banks aren't sleeping.
All right, so Franco wants to know via SMS, is City Lodge a good buy now?
Suffering from slowdown in the economy.
Yeah.
Another well-run business. But, you know, when occupancy goes from 68 to 65...
You don't make money, yeah.
They don't make exactly. You know, that's how tight the margins are. And I'm sure it's at a time now where businesses are, you know, cutting back on travel. It's not a weekend place. It's not a place where you go to the weekend. It was mainly designed for business travel. So... Mm-hmm. Again, when I say I'm disappointed in the results, I'm disappointed in the economy, which is leading to the poor results.
But look,
not, can't fault management,
CMH, there's so many retailers, they're all in the same boat here. The economy turns around, these shares will fly. I mean, the economy, off this low base, the economy doesn't have to do 5% for these shares to fly. The economy must just do 2% for these shares to fly. But will it? I mean...
So it's not... Yeah. So the fact that this company, a lot of companies are under pressure... is more a reflection of the economy rather than so-called management. I mean, some of the companies do silly things. I mean, some management, in order to kind of breach that gap, you know, do very silly things. But I mean,
obviously, and we all know this, the economy is tough. I mean, ArcelorMittal said they're going to retrench. No, yeah. They just got to cut the cost base. We saw, we know.
It's 2,000 jobs, yeah.
Multi-choice is also doing it. Mm. You know, there's big, this economy, and, you know, how do you get it moving? You know, you just don't know. But I suppose you can say the encouraging thing is, unless the world goes into a recession, we truly are probably over the worst now in our economy. Things should start to improve. We should see an interest rate cut coming up quite soon from our Reserve Bank. Inflation seems well under control. Hopefully the government's doing the right things and putting the right people in the right places. We saw the Reserve Bank governor reappointed.
Yeah.
Although it's not a direct bearing on the economy, but the PIC's got another board. You know, there have been some changes and hopefully they bear some fruit.
But then is it a case where now the reforms are a little bit too slow to, you know,
well,
kick in?
I suppose
into
they're
gear.
Always going to be too slow. Yeah. This is politics you're dealing with here after all.
All right. So the next question is on Santova. What is the panel's view on that stock?
I'll go past that one. Is this a transport company? What is it? I don't even know what they're doing.
I know it's a small caps company. That's one of the companies that Keith McLachlan is also one of our guests tends
to
look
at. Keith. Keep that for Keith.
But yes, we'll bank this one for Keith. The next question is on Naspers. Should I take shares in NewCo or the additional Naspers shares?
This is a complex thing because there's tax involved. Yeah. Putting tax aside, and the tax are actually, it's totally weird. That if you select the one, you taxed as the capital gains, but if you don't select it, you're not taxed as the capital gains and taxed for the full value. This tax story is actually very, very complex. And to be honest, I'm not 100% sure I understand it well.
Yeah.
But putting tax aside, you would actually want to go for the NewCo, only because it's very likely that the South African operations will be at a slight discount to the NewCo valuation. But the actual underlying assets between the two, they are virtually identical.
Your view, Dave?
We're going to pay capital gains tax. You know, it's just a delay, that's all. It's never going to be eliminated or taken away. What worries me is that it can be increased. So from my point of view, you're going to pay it, or your heirs are going to pay it. Someone's going to pay it. Mm. Take it now. I would prefer to be in Amsterdam. And I think, from my point of view, I think things are going to happen when they do list there. They're going to be able to raise capital. They're going to be able to do a lot of things there. So not that it's not going to reflect on the, you know, which is what Wayne's saying, even if you continue to hold the local share, you're still going to get that benefit.
But not quite as much.
Yeah.
Look, I mean, Naspers has got big ideas. They've got the three main businesses. The one business actually turned positive cash flows. They've got the food business, which is doing quite well. The thing I'm excited about is the payments business.
Yeah.
I think they're going to come under a little bit of stress in the classifieds. I don't think that game is so easy. But the food delivery could work, but the payment system does look as though it's going to work. So there's some quite good things coming from the non-10-cent part of Naspers.
Mm-hmm. But he's trying. You know, Bob van Dijk is putting his mind to actually moving away from relying on 10 cents and forming a company. And in this kind of environment, which is technologically driven, you know, whether it's in the US, wherever it is, I'm sure they'll come across someone. I'm certainly staying with Naspers.
Okay.
But I think it'll be okay, yeah. So pay your tax.
Which is important. The next question is very long, so I'm going to summarize it and make it quite short. So what the viewer wants to know is, what is the panel's view on Woolworths and Famous Brands? And has the panel recovered from the scars some of these companies have made?
So it's a good question. I mean, do you ever recover from these scars? And it's the same scar, by the way.
Okay.
They went overseas thinking they could sort it out, buying a company that was in trouble, buying a company that was too big relative to the home base, and they were both, quite frankly, disastrous. Maybe one's a little bit more disastrous than the other one. Can they recover from the scars? I don't know, actually. To be honest, I actually don't know.
It's overhanging. You know, if you look at Woolworths in Australia, I mean, it's a big drag. Yeah. And over and above that, They're dragged down by a game, you know, an economy that's going nowhere. My view on retailers is that, you know, Wayne said it in a different way, is that we've probably seen the worst. That doesn't mean you're going to get a sharp recovery. I think it'll just bumble along within a very narrow range.
You look, famous brands, I mean, the home base is good, eh? You know, they've got obviously got very good businesses here, but that gourmet burger, I mean, this was quite frankly catastrophic, to say the least.
But you've got to wait for the market to turn, the consumer to turn. But I think we've seen, you know, from a share price point of view, it's probably close to the bottom.
Yeah,
you know? I don't think we're going to see lower prices.
All right,
but so that's not an endorsement to buy. You know what I mean?
Stock picks. Let's start off with you, Wayne.
No, David and I are joining forces here for the first time. We're going to go with Sasol.
Yeah. Okay.
You've really explained it.
Uh-huh.
If it seems as though the chemical prices, from what I've heard, all the people who talk to me, have more or less bottomed out in America. Mm-hmm. Oil, who knows, but it'll probably stay above 60 more than it's going to stay below 60. And they will make very positive cash flows. They're gun shy now. They're not going to spend this money. They're going to give it to you as a dividend when it stops coming. And, you know, in 2 years out, this thing's easily single-digit price earnings ratio, which is cheap over time. So, yeah, I mean, you might have to wait a while, but it certainly in the longer-term view does look cheap.
The only warning shot.
Yeah.
Is that the weakness that we've seen recently, I hope that it's not pointing to some further disappointment, something else happening. We don't know.
Yeah.
Because normally when you see the share price responding like that, you know, it's for a reason. Unless there's some people who are just abandoning it for some other, you know, maybe foreign shareholders for whatever point. But on the news that we know at the moment, I think it looks cheap, yeah.
All right, gentlemen, thank you so much for your time. Thanks to David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities and Wayne McCurry from F&B Wealth and Investments. We take more of your stock-related questions tomorrow. Have a good evening. Stock picks. Let's start off with you, Wayne.
No, David and I are joining forces here for the first time. We're going to go with Sasol.
Yeah. Okay.
You've really explained it.
Uh-huh.
If it seems as though the chemical prices, from what I've heard, all the people who talk to me, have more or less bottomed out in America. Mm-hmm. Oil, who knows, but it'll probably stay above 60 more than it's going to stay below 60. And they will make very positive cash flows. They're gun shy now. They're not going to spend this money. They're going to give it to you as a dividend when it stops coming. And, you know, in 2 years out, this thing's easily single-digit price earnings ratio, which is cheap over time. So, yeah, I mean, you might have to wait a while, but it certainly in the longer-term view does look cheap.
The only warning shot is that the weakness that we've seen recently, I hope that it's not pointing to some further disappointment, something else happening. We don't know.
Yeah.
Because normally when you see the share price responding like that, you know, it's for a reason. Unless there's some people who are just abandoning it for some other, you know, maybe foreign shareholders for whatever point. But on the news that we know at the moment, I think it looks cheap, yeah.
All right, gentlemen, thank you so much for your time. Thanks to David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities and Wayne McCurry from F&B Wealth and Investments. We take more of your stock-related questions tomorrow. Have a good evening.